Hey everybody, thanks for hitting the download button on the Mania Mania podcast. Joey and I have had a really fun time reliving some of the best and worst moments from the WrestleMania's past, and we want to include you in the fun for upcoming episodes, so send us an email with your best and worst moments of any future WrestleMania that we haven't covered yet to mymaniamania@gmail.com, and we'll include your thoughts and your comments in our next podcast. So please keep hitting the download button, subscribe to iTunes, and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mania Mania!
Welcome to Mania Mania X7. I am your host, Terry Gobbledygooker Catlett, here as always with the best tag team partner in the universe, Jouet P.S. Holt.
Yeah.
And today we review for you WrestleMania X7, or 17, for those of you that can't add.
Yeah.
A lot has happened in the world of wrestling in the last year. Jouet, what is that stuff that's happened?
Okay, well, to start off, I'm just going to say that a lot of countdowns list this as the best WrestleMania of all time.
WrestleMania 17?
WrestleMania 17.
Okay.
WWE.com in 2014 said that this was the best WrestleMania of all time.
Oh, well, we're going to find out.
Yeah, we will find out. So the main event was Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Rock, which is a rematch from WrestleMania 15.
Yep.
So there was a huge feud going into this. At one point, Vince made Austin's wife, Deborah, The Rock's manager, which is just weird. What are you doing?
Right.
Like, you're just... I know what's going to work.
Listen, we don't need your wife around here, but...
Yeah. And, like...
Don't you think that takes a little of Stone Cold's character to have his wife so involved in everything? I know why he's doing it,
yeah.
But I'm just saying, like...
Another big feud was the Edge and Christian versus the Dudley Boys versus the Hardy Boys.
Yeah.
You may remember this from WrestleMania 16, or 2000, I should say.
Yeah.
But they're back for the third iteration, but it is technically TLC 2, because the first TLC was at Survivor Series, or SummerSlam of the previous year.
Okay.
So this is that's a big thing going into it. And then another one is Shane McMahon versus Mr. McMahon.
There's a lot of feuds in this.
This is heavy in the feuds.
That's one of the things that one of the reasons why this probably came out so well is that every match had a really deep story about it.
A reason to
care. So every single match had something that you were going to care about going into it.
Yeah. Shane had recently purchased WCW out from under Vince.
Yeah, in the timeline, we have just gotten rid of WCW. It's now WWE only.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Monday Night Wars are ostensibly over at this point.
They're done.
And that's a little sad.
Yeah.
Because there was so much good television during that time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, anything else leading up?
No. I mean, potentially
we won't
talk
every
about
match.
Every single one, but I'm not going to.
That'll do it. Let's set the stage for WrestleMania X7. It is April 1st, 2001 at the Reliant Astrodome in Houston, Texas. 67,925 people were there to watch WrestleMania 17. And we open with, of course, another video salute to the history of WrestleMania, telling us how WrestleMania 17 is going to be the best one yet.
Yeah.
And then we go right to our commentating group of JR and Paul Heyman.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry the King Lawler is not here,
which
is sad for me because I really like those two. But we've got Paul Heyman on the stick, which is never a dull moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go right to a little video history of the Y2J William Regal feud, because match number one is between
Chris Jericho versus William Regal.
And this is for the Intercontinental belt, and apparently William Regal has taken on the commissionership of the WWF, or E, is it E yet?
F, yeah. It's
F at
F.
this time.
I think the next one will be E.
And there was a little beef between these two, so hey, I don't need to rule from an office. I'll just get in the ring and deal with it.
Yeah.
That one of the things, of course, this is the first match. You want to start off with something that really gets the crowd going. Y2J is really over at this point, and William's got some solid heat behind him.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of worked the thing where Jericho had the bad body part, so it's a lot of moves designed to ruin that body part.
Yeah, there was a lot of solid action with that. Regal took the turnbuckle pad off and then rammed Jericho's shoulder into it. I'm like, Oh, that's interesting. I like that. It's a good
but most good of this innovation. Match is Regal just trying to break Jericho's left shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
But Jericho does prevail, and he gets the win in about 7 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. Decent opening match. Was there anything else that kind of stuck out for you in this match?
No, but I mean, it was a very solid wrestling match. They're both very capable workers, mm-hmm. and it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a solid match to start the night off with.
We cut right to the back where a limo is pulling up, and it's got a WCW1 license plate, and Shane McMahon gets out, and so we now know that Shane has arrived, and he's WCW loyal all the way.
He's ready to go.
We then cut to another part of the backstage area where APA is playing poker with Jacqueline, and they're just talking about – JBL's talking about how much he loves Houston.
Yeah,
and
a lot of history.
A lot of Houston icons that he's going through to get him fired up for this match. He's looking a lot trimmer, a lot more buff than he has been. So I guess Farouk kind of got him in the gym because he was pretty jacked at this point.
Yeah.
But that takes us right to match number two, which is between
The Right to Censor, which is Val Venus, The Good Father, Bull Buchanan with Stevie Richards versus Taz, Bradshaw and Farouk with Jacqueline.
Man, these guys have taken a big turn since the last WrestleMania, The Good Father.
Yeah.
The last WrestleMania started with him bringing about 17 hoes out onto the stage with Ice-T.
Yep.
And now he's The Good Father. I don't remember this Right to Censor gimmick, but as I was sitting here watching it, it started to come back to me a little bit. But watching their kind of most outrageous characters, you know, we've got the porn star, we've got the pimp, and now they're all...
They're trying to make everything G-rated and stop everybody from doing all the sexual stuff.
let's stop
and
that
tone it down.
Absolutely, because now we don't need it because WCW's gone. So let's just rely on our wrestling and fireworks. Awesome. Yeah. But this is about a 3.5 minute match. Taz and the Acolytes get a win. Was there anything in this match that kind of got your attention?
Nope,
me either, because it was, you know, we're sitting there watching these trying to come up with high points and things of interest, and this was pretty much just some hometown boys getting a win, which is fine, that, you know, the crowd, it seemed to enjoy it, but there was nothing super compelling or no big major moves. Everyone kind of did their things, you know. Yeah.
Bradshaw got his clothesline from Helen to finish it off. And
everyone
kind of
did their little moments, and we're moving on to the backstage where Trish is wheeling Linda in a wheelchair down one of the hallways, and Stephanie interrupts them because apparently that's part of the storyline now. Linda's catatonic, and the McMahons are using this to their advantage in some way. Yeah. I don't remember all the stories surrounding this. I just remember here's another WrestleMania where the McMahons are the center of the universe.
There's usually you'd like to be able to pick up on the storyline just from the backstage segment, but this just seemed a little too convoluted to me. And I'm like, she's catatonic because Vince made out with Trish or something.
Right.
But then Stephanie's on their side, but not, I don't know, it was a mess.
Yeah, I'm sure their family therapy sessions are really interesting, but yeah, they basically are just going all out to sell angles for this pay-per-view, which is, I guess, fine, but let's go to match number three, which is between
Raven versus Kane versus The Big Show.
Now, this is Raven's debut at WrestleMania. He comes down to the ring with a personalized shopping cart.
His debut as Raven.
That's true.
WrestleMania 10, he was Scotty Flamingo.
You're right. Thank you for the correction. But he comes down to the ring with a personalized shopping cart that says Raven on it.
Yeah, perfect.
Which I thought, that's something he'd have. Yeah. Cool. So Kane comes down, and then he and Raven start fighting before the Big Show can even walk down to the ring.
Yeah, his music hasn't even hit, and the bell actually rang.
And that's fine because it was such a big place, it took him forever to get down to the ring. So rather than watch the Big Show kind of labor all the way down the ring, I'm kind of glad there was something else to watch during that. But you're right. Like, the bell did ring, which makes no sense
The match
at
started.
All.
Speaking of Raven, I once saw him at a Comic-Con where he was, like, autographing stuff, but he was also selling his own comic books, like his collection of comic books.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he just had, like, some old Superman comics or whatever, and he was just, like, selling them. Or you could get his autograph, depending on which
Well, hey, we all got to make money,
yeah,
man.
That's true.
That's pretty cool. You can either have him. What if he autographed like a Spider-Man for you or something? I guess that'd be okay. This fight is for the hardcore title, so there's a lot of hardcore things going on.
Mm-hmm.
The fight, you know, is all over the place. It spills out into the crowd, goes all the way to the back. They have this segment in the back where they're kind of fighting in one of the hallways or like mm-hmm. one of the little office areas.
Yeah.
Because there were, you know, walls were being dented.
Yeah.
There was a segment or there was a spot where Kane threw Raven through a glass window,
yeah.
which looked pretty great.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this was a botch or not, but there was a little caged area.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, Kane was down for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And Big Show threw Raven into the cage and the referee into the cage and then looked like he was trying to padlock it shut.
But it wasn't working, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they were trying to set it up where Kane would actually lift the door off, but it didn't look – because he just opened the door.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he didn't – I don't think Big Show got the lock actually on it. But, yeah, I think they were trying to just – harken back to Kane's debut when he ripped the door of the Hell in a Cell off.
Mm-hmm.
So they were probably going to try and do something similar to that.
Well,
but it did not work.
Yeah, I marked that down as a botch. So, but they did. It seemed like they had a lot of fun trying to set up like the pathway that these guys would go down
mm-hmm.
and just have little things for them to throw each other into.
Yeah.
I like the little golf cart thing.
Yeah.
The way Raven kind of made him look like he got run over even though he didn't.
Yeah.
To me it was kind of fun. And then they go from the backstage area out onto the main stage, kind of where they walk out for the entrances.
Mm-hmm.
Big Show goes to press slam Raven off the stage, like he's going to throw him off the stage, which
yeah.
would have looked pretty cool. Kane comes and big boots him,
yep.
and so both of them fall into the little into the what do you call that little?
There's like a
orchestra
staging,
pit or
yeah.
like a little pit thing.
Yeah.
So Kane crawls in there and covers him, and it was kind of funny because the ref didn't even bother trying to get in there. He yeah. just on the side of the
yeah, he did it on the side.
He just does the 1-2-3 on the side, which I thought was kind of funny. But what do you think of this match? I thought overall it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. They Big Show and Kane went through a wall at one point.
Yeah.
When they were fighting through the crowd, the cameraman had to push people out of the way. It was kind of funny seeing like the camera, and then just his arm coming and just
right.
like shoving people
that,
out.
That was
because like, there's so many people.
Yeah, that was the only thing that was so that looked kind of weird because they didn't have enough security
mm-hmm.
to. I mean, and you would think they would have it kind of planned out.
70,000 people,
right? But you at least have that area kind of planned out to
yeah.
where they could at least get the TV guys through.
Yeah.
Maybe it looks more chaotic that way. Maybe that's kind of
yeah.
cool. I don't know.
But then there was one point where like Kane was choking Raven with a garden hose, and it was just funny. Like, it's just a green garden hose
right.
that they would get in like supermarket sweep for
yeah.
a lot of money.
I just
you always go for the garden hose and the turkeys in supermarket sweep.
That's right. right. They I thought they were pretty inventive with this one.
Yep.
I liked the fact that it was just three of them. They used a lot of the arena. They did a lot of damage backstage, which was really cool. I don't know how much they had to pay the Astrodome after this, but there was a lot of damage done.
Mm-hmm.
But I give it a check plus. I like this match.
Yeah.
And your new hardcore champion is Kane. So
yeah.
deal with that, everybody. Mm-hmm. Get ready to get hardcore.
Yeah.
After that, we go to a little shot of Kurt Angle watching some game tape. Apparently, there was some sort of tap issue with, like, he'd had matches with Chris Benoit
mm-hmm.
where he wanted Chris Benoit to tap, but the ref didn't see it, so
It was not an official match.
Yeah.
So
the, apparently storyline, continuation of storyline, Edge and Christian interrupt him to talk to him.
Yeah.
Just banal little
mm-hmm.
little exchange, blah,
yeah.
blah. Then we go to an interview with the lady that flew in from Australia.
Yeah, Brisbane, Australia.
That's right. So she flew 30 hours on a plane, and we need to talk to her.
Yeah.
Then
they show a video of The Rock showing up in the locker room. Man, he got a huge pop. He
yep.
just showed up.
He walked through a door and put
yeah.
his bag down.
Yeah. He wasn't not even physically, like, you can't even physically see him. You're just showing video.
Mm-mm.
And huge pop.
They love it.
Yeah.
They can't wait to see him. But right after that, we go to match number four between
Eddie Guerrero with Perry Saturn versus Test.
And this match is for the European title. We're still in the age of several titles
yep.
in the WWF. And I was... this match, I don't know. I didn't really dig it. I did note, like, seeing Tess get caught in the ropes was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I thought that was a botch to me.
Yeah.
But me, it was Eddie was working really hard in this match to make Tess look like a monster.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, Eddie was the one that was kind of doing all the little flips and, you know, like he'd ricochet off the ropes and Tess would pick him up and Eddie would, you know, squirm all the way around him, and then you know, of course, Tess would power slam him.
Yeah, there was he had a couple. Tess had some good offensive moves like that, but it was like a Tess did a tilt-a-whirl side slam, which is Eddie Guerrero having to do all the spinning.
Yeah, that's what, like, it was, and then Eddie doing all of that.
Yeah, and then Tess also did a tilt-a-whirl power bomb, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah, they had some decent stuff. Like Eddie did a brainbuster, which is always a fun looking move.
But Eddie was doing a lot of work in this one.
Yep.
And then, you know, he had the man at ringside, Perry Saturn.
In his stupid hat.
Yeah. And even worse, his interference was really sloppy.
Yeah.
Because both times he did, the ref was in plain, like, I don't like it when it looks like
that. Yeah, one time the ref, like, Perry got in the ring and the ref had to turn around.
Yes.
Like, nope. I'm not seeing this.
Because he was missing his cues, he had to make everyone in the match kind of work harder to cover his shit, and I didn't dig it.
Then Dean Malenko came out at the end, too, to get involved.
Yeah, he interferes, which allowed Eddie to hit Tess with the belt.
Mm-hmm.
The referee turns around. He's covered by Eddie. We get 1-2-3, and Eddie Guerrero is the new European champion.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess we're all very happy about.
Yeah, you were a solid worker.
Solid worker. I'm glad. You know, it was cool starting to see a lot of these WCW guys get good runs in a company that would push them.
Yes.
So, you know, we've got Jericho as the IC strap and Eddie Guerrero as the European title.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
But we go right to the back where we had a little Mick Foley interview, and he started doing that gimmick, started doing that bit where he'd announce the city that they were in, you know?
Yeah, get that and cheap pop.
Cheap pop. And so he does that. We go to some video of Stone Cold arriving.
Yeah.
Just like we saw from The Rock, and he got a really good pop as well. They're just really excited to see these two guys just enter a building.
Yep.
And then we go right to match number 5, which is between
Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit.
Yeah, now I was really looking forward to this match. These guys are both really great wrestlers and really good workers, and I was excited. And the crowd was giving them a lot of credit and a lot of respect for the, because they did a lot of shoot wrestling in this.
Yeah.
And so, like, the majority of the match was a lot of just, you know, moves on the mat and just regular natural wrestling maneuvers. And I thought it looked great.
Yeah, it was really good.
And every, you know, they'd have a little tussle and do a bunch of, you know, reversals and moves and all this stuff. And then they'd stand up and look at each other and the crowd would just applaud. It was pretty great.
Yeah. Kurt Angle, when he came out, he actually cut a promo on Texas, which I enjoyed. It was funny. He's like, what's with the cowboy hats? You're not 7. Take them off. He's like,
do they not remember him wearing that tiny little cowboy hat?
And it was so good. May have not happened yet, but yeah, it was so funny.
Yeah,
that was actually pretty good. Yeah, and the match itself was very good. They were lots of rolling around, really good freestyle wrestling. Obviously, Angle was a gold medalist, so you obviously know he can do it.
But Benoit was not behind.
Benoit was
equal to the task.
Benoit was holding his own, absolutely.
Benoit's chops look and sound the most vicious that I've probably seen to date. He was smacking this shit out of Angle.
There was a couple times, there's Angle and Benoit were exchanging chops. So I put exchange chops to a chorus of woos.
It was pretty great. They did a really good job kind of building this match because it was kind of shoot wrestling for a while. And then, you know, Kurt decides to, hey, let's pick it up. And I'm going to get a little dirty and start punching you and stuff. The only weakness that I saw in this match was they had a kind of a weak ref knockout spot.
Yeah.
The ref took a small little bump, but it didn't look like it was enough to knock him out. But he was supposed to be knocked out.
Yeah.
So he basically had to sell a kind of a weak blow.
Mm-hmm.
But it went into that crippler crossface spot where Kurt Angle was tapping.
Yes.
And, of course, he's not going to see it because the ref is out.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my only weakness in this match. But there was a really nice, this match kind of ends with Angle reversing a move on Benoit and then rolling him up with the trunks for the 1-2-3. So Kurt Angle wins this match. Do you have any other thoughts on this one?
No, it was just really solid action. Like, Angle went for his moonsault, and again, like, he didn't get in 2000. He's not getting right. here. Benoit puts his knees up. That was a little iffy because
Benoit
was kind of on his side, and it was a little weird, but a little botchy. But overall, like, solid match, great action, and Angle cheats to win.
Yep. So, which still a heel.
So it was good.
Yeah, it was a really good 14-minute match. So they gave him a lot of time to work, and I thought it really paid off because it was a really great match.
Yeah.
After this, we go to the back, and Regal is being interviewed as he's walking to his office. He walks into his office to find Kamala, the Ugandan giant, dancing on his desk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how if I had a nickel for the time that's happened.
Every time I go into my office, there's Kamala. Kimchi's trying to get him down, but it's just not working.
It's not working. But then we do some footage of the WrestleMania pep rally that happened earlier that week, which was nice to see them mixing with the troops and enjoying that.
Yeah.
And then we go right to match number six, which is between
Ivory versus China.
Woo! For the women's title. And this is terrible in every sense of the word. Ivory is now a member of that, what's the group?
Right to Censor.
Right to Censor, and she has a hissy fit about the belt at the beginning of the match.
Yep.
And then this is pretty much just a squash match, from what I could tell. China not really being affected by anything.
Yep.
Really just kind of throwing Ivory around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't really see the, you know, other than for the belt to change hands.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't make sense to me for her to dominate in this fashion, because what you're really saying is that Ivory's a terrible champion.
Yeah, why did we give her the belt?
Yeah, but it ends with her kind of press slamming Ivory over her head, dropping her to the ground, and then just kind of, you know, laying on her like, hey, no big deal.
Well, it was weird because, like, Ivory got the upper hand early, and she was like, got on her back, on China's back, and started punching her, and then China was just not reacting, like, at all.
Because the blows were super weak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, China wasn't doing anything. Like, in the past, she hasn't reacted to stuff before, too.
Yeah.
But there's
like,
also,
she didn't sell at all. Yeah,
she wasn't selling it.
It's also the way Ivory was hitting her.
Yeah. At first she was hitting her, trying to hit her, and then it wasn't working. So then she's like, all right, well, I'm just going to throw like a girl now.
Right.
But China actually power bombed her. And then when she went for the pin, she pulled her up by the hair, which I'm like, that's always a cool. I think that should be utilized.
It's
more.
It's a cool heel move, yeah.
It should be utilized more, but it's not. And then she went for the gorilla press slam, and then a very nonchalant pin. I'm like, this.
Yeah.
It was not what they were trying to do was not executed well.
Yeah,
I feel.
Sell, man.
Yeah.
Just have a match if you're gonna do it.
Yeah.
So that match is gratefully over, and we go back to the back, and we've got Vince, Stephanie, and Trish, and they've got Linda there, and they're all talking about. Linda.
Yeah.
Just continuing that storyline and how the match is going to play out.
Yeah.
And then we do a video history of kind of what's happened to this point, which I was grateful for because it kind of let me know what the story was going into this match.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go right to match number seven, which is between
Shane McMahon versus Vince McMahon with Stephanie McMahon.
And this is a street fight with Mick Foley as the special referee. And Shane comes out to the ring, and he cuts a quick promo, and then he introduces the legendary Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought having these matches back-to-back was maybe not a great idea,
mm-hmm.
because you just had like a really I really thought having these matches back-to-back wasn't a great idea because you had a really non-action women's match,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got – you know, these guys are, I mean, they're doing a lot of things, but it's not wrestling action.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was a long time to have no real wrestling action.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That was just kind of my thought with these two back to back. What was your thought on this street fight?
They did much better than they should, considering mm-hmm. that they own the company. You don't need them. They don't need to be in the ring.
Right.
And I've said that before in Shane McMahon matches, but they don't need to be good. But they are.
Well, he's fantastic.
Yeah, Shane's fantastic, and Vince.
And then Vince will just take a beating.
Yeah, Vince sells, and he has no problem doing anything.
Yeah, you gotta give them respect for that because that you know the kendo sticks and Shane's just beating the hell out of Vince the whole time.
Yeah,
the psychology of that match was good. It's just like you're not gonna get a lot of wrestling action.
Right.
It's really just a lot of, hey, I'm going to hit you with a lot of heavy things.
Of course.
I'm going to put you on tables.
But that's all they needed,
And, it started, you know, because you had the psychology going into this match, and then as they're bludgeoning each other, Trish wheels down Linda.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, I want to. Shane McMahon was like taking apart the Spanish announce table, and then the announcers were like, they do like a, oh, not this again type of gesture.
Right.
And then Shane goes for an elbow drop on Vince McMahon on the table, and then Steph pulls Vince out. So then he just takes the table out. And I'm like, it's very – I like to see it because obviously he's in better shape than Mick Foley is, but in more agile. But in 2000, Foley just takes the edge of the table, whereas Shane takes it dead on, and it's like, it was a very good spot.
It looked really good too. Yeah, big bump from Shane, and I'm glad Vince didn't have to – not that Vince wouldn't take it, but it looked better with Shane just missing everything and hitting the table by himself.
Absolutely.
As the psychology starts to play out, we've got Trish bringing Linda down to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Vince goes crazy, you know, because he hates his wife for some reason.
Yeah.
But it all kind of ramps up. A lot of things happen, but it ramps up to Vince putting Linda in a chair in the ring to watch him beat his son.
Mm-hmm.
So he you know, pulls out four trash cans, puts them in the ring, and starts beating his son. And then the great moment when Linda rises.
Yeah.
Vince turns around to see her no longer catatonic, and then she low blows him.
It was good.
Which was great.
Yeah.
And then I guess Mick starts to Foley gets involved at this point.
Yeah,
right?
Mick starts beating Vince up, helps Shane out, shoves him out into the corner, does his running knee at him.
Yeah.
And then one of my favorite spots.
It was good.
Shane puts the trash can on Vince's chest.
Yeah, and he's laid up in the corner.
And then Shane McMahon goes to the turnbuckle on the same side, but across the ring, on the far side of the ring. And then he jumps across the entire ring and kicks a trash can into his father's face.
Yep.
That is so good.
There are many wrestlers that can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, that was incredible agility. It looked fantastic. And then the sound of that trash can, it just it made it all work. And then, you know, Shane gets the win. WCW wins that round.
Yeah.
But it's a great finish, and it just shows how fantastic Shane is, and then how great Vince is for taking all these bumps, because he took a bunch of them.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. We go to the back, and we cut to an interview segment with the Hardys at Access. Then we have a little video thing of Triple H getting ready to go.
And then
we do another one of the Undertaker shadow boxing, because he's getting ready. And then we go right to match number 8, which is between
the Hardy Boys, Matt and Jeff, versus Edge and Christian, versus the Dudleys, D-Von and Bubba Ray.
And we're back again for the TLC match.
Yeah.
They had to step it up in this one.
Yes.
We saw it all in last WrestleMania. What did you think? Because they added these elements. They added more people.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, like the run-in from the back.
Yes.
So we're doing kind of the same moves. We're crashing tables and chairs and ladders and all this stuff. But, like, to me, the added elements were these new people. Like, we've got Lita. Like, we've got smaller people taking big bumps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did you kind of think of this next evolution of this?
It was good. They also added more with what they previously had. Like, the tables and chairs weren't necessarily a part of WrestleMania 2000. They were used, but not, like, a part of it. Whereas this one, like, we're using these. So they used the tables. Like, when Rhino comes out, he spears or he gores Matt Hardy through a table. It's like, and just more tables were used, which is nice because the tables have a bigger spot. It looks bigger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because of the crashing.
Because they're getting creamed,
And they did a lot of stuff like that, which is good. I think it was the first one was so crazy that they had to do even bigger things to do to this one to make it work. And they did a lot of great spots. And I think it was an escalation, but not in, it didn't seem as dangerous. Like, it was obviously dangerous, but the level of that they had to increase it, their danger didn't seem to increase it as well. I mean, like, their safety didn't look like they were in so much danger.
Right.
With the added elements of they were doing more moves that were dangerous, but I didn't feel it when I was watching. I didn't look like, okay, these guys are going to die.
Yeah. The reason I was asking is cuz They were able to do the same, some of the same moves that they did in the last one.
Yes.
But doing the 3D on Lita is going to get a much bigger reaction
than
doing it on Matt or Jeff Hardy.
Of course.
And so, to me, like, they were like, it was like, okay, well, how do we use these same elements but get a bigger pop out of them? Mm-hmm. And I thought they found a really good way to do that. Like, I didn't remember Spike Dudley, but now I do. Because I remember it from ECW now and all this stuff. But watching him get, you know, DDT'd from a ladder or something like that is a lot more impressive than, not, this is splitting hairs, but it's just like, oh, there's an element of, that's a smaller dude.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, he's going to get hurt.
And all this stuff. That makes sense.
And so that's why they did do bigger moves. But then they were also able to just kind of use some of the same elements and up the wow factor by doing them to smaller people, I guess. You know, like, you fear for Lita's life because it's like, that's a lot of – that's a big bump to take.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just not heavy enough to absorb that type of
– Right.
You know what I mean? It's got nothing to do with her being a woman. It's just like she's got a lot of weight landing on her and all this stuff, and she just doesn't have that big frame.
Yeah, like if Devon takes a bump, he's 250 pounds, so he's got a little bit more padding where, like, to get to his bones is going to take a little bit more. Whereas for her, 110 pounds or whatever, she's going to be – it's going to be easier to bust her in half.
We got the Swanton Bomb again, except this time we're landing on two people instead of one. So that's the wow factor for that.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite move, and you know, it may not have been, I guess, the biggest bump, but we've got two people on top of a ladder. We've got who was it? It was Bubba and Matt on top, and then Rhino – pushes the ladder and they fall. They end up falling through
four
tables floor, and it was just so impressive with the crash. You know,
yeah, that was a really good one.
I really liked that.
Then of course you got the Edge spearing Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy was hanging from the belt, and then Edge speared him in midair, you still see to this day.
Yeah, that was a big one. Right before that, leading up to it, because he was going to try and. They set it up to where you could walk on the top of three ladders to get to that.
Yeah.
But one of the ladders got wobbly and fell, so just him having to recover from that.
That would have been really cool if he didn't. That didn't wobble.
It would have been sweet. Like, because you could tell he wanted to run across three of them and just jump up to the belt thing. But he had to do it another way, but still. Very creative.
It was still very cool.
These guys are inventive, and they will. I mean, these matches have gone down in history as some of the best ever. So, I'm always appreciative for the effort they put into them.
Of course.
Edge and Christian win this one. They are the tag team champions. Anything else on this one, sir?
Nope.
Excellent.
That's good.
We do some access footage because we got to clear up all the shit in the ring because there's so many. Ladders and broken tables and all this stuff. And one of the, because they're showing all these people interacting with wrestlers, and then they have this like make a wish booth that they were doing, and I thought it was interesting that a man paid $200 for a personalized Socko. Which, you know, may not seem like a huge amount now, but like this was 2001, so I mean, I don't know that I wouldn't pay $200 for a sock.
No,
but,
it's still that's even cool. Even back then, it's still quite a bit of money. Or now.
But so we have, you know, a lot of great footage of the access. And then we go right to match number 9, which is between
the Bushwhackers, Luke and Butch, Duke the Dumpster Drosy, the Iron Sheik, Earthquake, the Goon, Doink, Kamala and Kimchi with Harvey Whippleman, the Repo Man, Jim Cornette, Nikolai Volkoff, Michael P.S. Hayes, One Man Gang, the Gobbledygooker, Tugboat, Hillbilly Jim, Brother Love, and Sergeant Slaughter.
You did it again.
Yeah.
I always love when you do big lists. This is the 19-match gimmick battle royal. And here's another thing, another example of what you're talking about. It took about 30 minutes to get everybody down to the ring because we gave them their all their
everybody
own
got their full entrance
spot.
Yeah.
And then the match lasted for 3 minutes.
Yeah, it was so long.
It was.
The entrances were so long.
That bell rang and people started flying out of that ring like rats on a ship. Yeah. It was hilarious. It was like, these are all legends and there's just no offense and everyone just starts flying over.
Yeah. Another thing, Mean Gene and Bobby the Brain Heenan were commentators for this.
Which drove me nuts because they had Bobby the Brain in the back the whole time.
Yeah.
And, you know, all due respect to Paul Heyman, I much would have rather listened to Bobby the Brain Heenan in absence of JR, or in absence of the King than, than Paul Heyman. But it was, for the 3 minutes he was out there doing all that, he was fantastic. And hearing Mean Gene again is also fantastic. Mm-hmm. But what a mess this was.
Yeah, Hillbilly Jim seemed to be in the best shape of all of them.
He looked fantastic.
Yeah.
He was thrown out very quickly.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The Iron Sheik ends up withstanding everything, winning, being the only man not to be thrown out of the ring.
Yeah.
But that's not good enough for Sergeant Slaughter.
No.
Because after the bell, he goes in and he puts him in the Cobra Clutch.
Cobra Clutch.
And to no real result.
No.
It just means that he gets to stand there and look victorious. Yeah. Although, the Sheik got a nice pop, so I don't know what he's trying to do there.
Yeah.
Because people seem to like that the Sheik won. I don't see what the big beef was.
Yeah.
Maybe I guess it's just you know, carry over from feuds past, but it seemed unnecessary.
We can't have Iraq win. You gotta
but
have
they
an American.
You gotta there's a way to stop that. You book it different. I don't
Good
know.
Point.
I mean, you just don't book Iran winning.
Yeah.
You book USA winning.
Yeah.
But I guess I think they owed the Sheik a lot for. I think Vince owes him for putting Hogan over and all that. So
Sheik's
that's
still upset about that.
So that's probably why he let him win.
Fuck the Hulk Hogan.
I'm speculating. Fuck the Hulk Hogan. I'm just speculating, but that could be it. After this match, we go to a video of the Taker Triple H feud.
Mm-hmm.
We're setting all that up, and now we're ready for match number 10 between
Triple H versus The Undertaker.
And this is just a singles match. There's no title on the line. There's nothing but pride on the line as these two guys step into the ring. Really cool intro for Triple H as they have Motorhead playing live.
Motorhead, and we're going to kick your ass.
That's right.
Or whatever he says.
No, it was great. I thought it was a really cool entrance. You know, I mean, having them play live, they sounded great. The crowd really loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was a five-minute entrance, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Then we got we're fully in the American Badass gimmick of The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the bell tolls, and then we've got the bike and and all of that stuff. So entrances aside, what did you think of this fight? Did you like this at all?
It's weird because I know Triple H is a good wrestler, but a lot of times I watch his matches and I'm just like not interested.
What turned you off about them?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's just something about like Triple H, like he knows what he's doing in the ring.
Is it the way he sells or the way he carries himself or like there's got to be something that's kind of a turn because I kind of feel it too. He's never been someone that I've kind of gravitated towards.
Yes.
I much rather like it when he's a heel because I like seeing him get – his body's weird to me.
Yeah, he does.
So
yeah.
So he just – he's always kind of got like this
– his pecs are so long.
Well, I'm not going to analyze it. Yes,
well, I have no problem with it.
He has oddly shaped breasts.
Yeah.
But the way his body moves and the way he carries himself, it's tough to get sympathy for him because
–
just the way he carries, you know, he's always got that slunched over kind of, you know, bulldozer look to him.
Yeah.
And then, like, here's the thing. Like, early in this match, he was selling way too much.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that The Undertaker was doing was knocking him loopy.
Yeah.
Which, we're just starting the match. So
yeah.
You haven't received that much damage yet.
Right.
And so, I don't know. It's everything that comes off of him seems to be a manipulation to me, and so I just don't buy it as much.
Like, yeah, it doesn't.
There's nothing sincere about it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem natural. Like when he wrestles like once or twice a year, and those matches, like I'm into him. Like they're interesting to me, and he.
But
is it
the story leading into it, or is
it's,
it?
It's a little of both, but like actually the match itself, I buy it because it seems more real.
Okay.
It could be like he has a better understanding of how his character. On the microphone should be represented in the ring, because that's a big disconnect. Also, is like you have to connect your character on the microphone with how that person would react in the ring.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like Triple H would be his character on the microphone is very arrogant and over the top, but he doesn't necessarily wrestle that way.
Right.
And there's that disconnect, so that might be part of it.
Well, I mean, he's still, you know, fairly early into, you know, how far into his career is he now? Being at like the top of the ladder. I mean, he's, you know, 3 or 4 years, I guess.
Yeah.
At the top.
Yeah, at the top, probably. Yeah, I'd say about three.
you know, the last one was the first WrestleMania that he got to leave as champion. Because mm-hmm. he, you know, he had a hard time. He was kind of sandwiched in between The Rock and Austin.
Yeah.
Those, you know, always almost kind of like the afterthought in those two.
Right.
So, yeah, I get it. It's just, man, he's just not someone I'm ever going to go, man, what a great – yeah. I mean, you know he's capable, but I'm
yeah,
just,
exactly. Like, we know that he's good
in the ring.
I'm
never compelled by his story. I'm right. never – there's nothing about him that I ever – that I just go, wow.
Yeah.
Now, maybe there's that all changes at the Hell in the Cell between these two.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, there are just some factors in this. Like, when, you know, the Undertaker gets hit with this – I've never understood the sledgehammer being used, because it should knock someone unconscious.
It should break your skull.
Right. And I don't like it when you use that and people don't fall down and pass out.
Yeah.
Because the Undertaker takes one on the head and not knocked out.
No, nope, just a little bit of blood.
Yeah. This match escalates. Taker, you know, after Taker gets hit in the head with a sledgehammer, he, you know, recovers masterfully mm-hmm. and gives Triple H the last ride and gets the pin for the win. But I don't know. This match didn't do it a lot for me.
Yeah, it's weird, because in this era of The Undertaker, he's like, or his WrestleMania is like, I know he's been missing for the last couple, but a lot of them just, I'm not into his matches. Like, later on, in like the 20s, in the late 20s, and the more current era of his matches at WrestleMania, of the later years of the streak, they're great matches. Like,
well, he's more compelling because they're later in the streak. Like,
yeah.
Oh, this is the 20th one. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's, I mean, or he, it's compelling because you're watching going, oh, that's an old guy really doing all this stuff. It's not, you know.
And the streak was also a part of the storyline. Like, people were going in to end the streak. So it's like, is it going to end? Is it going to end this time? Is it going to end this time? And then it doesn't. Whereas at this point, it just a match. And it just maybe I'm not into the story. The story's not built in good enough for me to actually care about it.
Yeah.
But.
And maybe that's just something they didn't do a good enough job of leading up to this. But, I mean, they're pretty much like, okay, Triple H, you can't fight The Rock or Stone Cold, so who's the next best person to rub you against?
That's
the Undertaker.
Yeah.
But that leaves us with one match left, and we're ready for our main event. We've got the two biggest names in the sport at this point, and the Astrodome is crazy ready for this. So let's get right to it. Let's go to match number 11 between
Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Rock.
And this is their second time headlining WrestleMania.
Yep.
The first one was, I thought, one of the best matches I've seen. It's the way they kind of spaced it out was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
There was some story to this one as well.
Yep.
The added elements of, you know, Vince McMahon and I guess, you know, just the Stone Cold's coming back and he wants what's his type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just looking over The Rock's career, I forgot how many times he kind of job for a lot of people. Like, he was over despite not having the greatest win-loss record at the biggest events, you know, because up, you know, he got screwed out of the last WrestleMania.
Yep.
He got, you know, has he ever really just won a huge WrestleMania event without the help of his father? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, now, you know, he's still The Rock and all that, but man, you know, he's been kind of carrying it while Austin's been away, and then he's, you know, Austin comes back and he's got to give up the belt.
Yeah.
But that was pretty interesting.
That just proves, like, how big Austin was. Because, like, The Rock is once in a lifetime, but so is Austin. Austin's even bigger. And it's, like, to know that, like, The Rock is, like, the number one guy only because Austin is away. You know? The second Austin comes back, people, like, don't even give a shit about The Rock anymore. I mean, like, they care about him because they put on great matches, but it's still, like, nope, this is Austin. Austin's the best.
Well, and to be fair to The Rock, it's Houston, Texas.
Good point.
And it's Steve Austin. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure we know which way this is going
to
go. Well,
I mean, if it's in Miami, that's the only time it'll be even close to
exactly.
even.
Yeah. What did you think of this match? Because I like 15 and I like 19.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think this one was those two. Like,
yes.
You got the first one and then you got the passing of the torch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this one was just kind of in the middle. And this one, you know, McMahon ends up coming down at the end, turning on The Rock, allowing, you know, Austin to kind of beat him. Austin always says that this is one that he regrets, the finish of this match. Mm-hmm. What's your take on the finish of this match and him kind of wanting to turn heel here?
I didn't necessarily disagree with it, but he was still so over that he didn't need it. Right. And then The Rock was actually getting some boos. There's actually a lot of boos and cheers for both of them at various points mm-hmm. in the match. And then also, like, when Vince came out, I didn't feel like the timing was right in the actual match itself.
Did it seem like he came down too early?
Yeah. To me, it seemed like he came down too early. Like, it wasn't ready for that to happen. Then when he came out, it was just, like, a bit of a mess. Because even watching it, like, I knew what happened because mm-hmm. I've heard Austin talk about it so many times on his podcast. But
right. It
seemed almost like it wasn't clear enough that he was turning until the very, very end. And it just, I don't know, it seemed weird.
Because I was thinking about this, and some of the, you know, Austin fights a certain way.
Yes.
There were more heelish elements to his fight in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just a little, the way they set it up was, I need this belt, I need to do it, so I'm going to be even more dirty about it.
Yeah, they did set it up in the story that
and
way.
And so, that's why I was thinking, like, if he... It kind of solidified the fact that he would do anything to get his title back.
Right.
To go ahead and you know, make the alliance with McMahon and to, you know, screw over The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And because he had wrestled that way and pointed the match that way, if he had, because Austin's always talked about just kind of, you know, taking all of the help from McMahon and then stunning him at the end and staying babyface.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have made sense. Because of the buildup and then the way they wrestled this match.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't see, you know, once they committed to all that, I don't see how he could have just called that,
the audible.
Yeah, called the audible and done something else.
Because I would agree. He did wrestle this match as a heel. I don't know. It was, I think that just overall this match, it was maybe because 15 was so good that mm-hmm. this one was just a bit of a letdown.
Well, and it was kind of the same structure as the other, like, you know, mm-hmm. they kind of have the Austin Rock match,
yeah,
which is fine because it's really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys sell fantastic for each other.
Yeah,
JR was nobody sells a match like that guy. He's so fantastic.
Yeah. A one-on-one match, there's nobody better to call the action than JR.
I mean, both these guys got color. Both these guys were taking big shots. A lot of punishment being dished out.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd was every time anybody did anything, they were nuts for it. So, you know, obviously it was a fantastic match. I just, you know, I don't agree with his assessment, although it, you know, it's him.
Yeah.
Fine. But, you know, he wanted to be a heel and that, you know,
mm-hmm.
he just watched Hogan have probably one of the better runs of his career doing the same thing. So why not do something different? But, you know, especially like the way they used him after this
mm-hmm.
in a more comedic
role.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't see how he could have done that, but he always talks about doing it, so I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah.
Anything else on this match, sir?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Then it was a good match. The Rock puts the sharpshooter on Steve Austin because he does it sometimes.
Right.
He has the worst sharpshooter in the history of the business. He grabs the wrong leg. He crosses the legs at the wrong spot. He has to hold him in such a weird way. And then Austin puts a sharpshooter on him. Like, this is how you put a sharpshooter on.
Right.
And Austin doesn't do the sharpshooter.
They did a lot of old school moves. They did the million dollar dream.
Yeah, yeah.
They were pulling. They had to pull a lot out in the arsenal to make it the 30 minutes on this one.
Yeah.
But it was still a fantastic match. And that is it for WrestleMania 17. So let's go to the awards. Zhui, who's your pop of the night?
Okay, pop of the night. The biggest was Austin, but my award goes to Test getting untangled from the ropes. Crowd gave him a big pop for getting untangled.
Yep, I will give it to Austin, but yes, the crowd was very responsive to that. My botch of the night was Test getting caught in the ropes because it was an interesting point of that match when everyone kind of looked confused.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Saturn had a chance to, you know, usually when they plan that, they go into an offensive mode about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Saturn didn't really take advantage of it. Neither did Guerrero.
Yeah. Because
Guerrero is having to actually help him out of the ropes.
Right.
So he and the ref, and this is probably, like you've spoken about before, the tightening of the ropes.
Yeah.
it wasn't easy to get him out of there. So Guerrero had to actually help him do that.
When this happened in like WrestleMania 3, 4, and 5 or whatever, they got out fairly easily.
The ref could have done it by himself, but the ref was trying to do it by himself, and he couldn't. So I thought that was my botch of the night. What was your botch?
My botch of the night was the triple threat hardcore match starting before Big Show entered the ring. Just give him time.
Nope. It takes too long. We got to get going. We're trying to get through this thing. We got to get to the back and throw people through windows. What was your bump of the night, sir?
My bump of the night was Matt Hardy and Bubba Ray falling through four tables.
That was mine as well. It may not have been as dangerous, I guess, as the Swanton Bomb onto Spike and I'm sorry, I forget who the other person
Rhino.
Was. Under Rhino. But it looked the most impressive just because that whole time that ladder is falling, you're just going, oh no. And then they go through four tables, and that just – and at the end of the match, they just left those guys laying there. It was great. So that's my bump as well. What is your spot of the night?
My spot of the night, I'm going to give it to two of them. Edge's spear on Jeff Hardy.
That was good.
That was a great spot. And the other one is Shane coast to coast with the trash can.
I like that one. I like how they built up to that because, the whole Linda standing up and the like that whole thing I think was built very well. So as a big spot, I like that one. The end of the main event where the McMahon came down and he turns, and they were doing everything to Rock that they could, and I thought this helped too because both the guys still leave as tough guys, but he had to hit the Rock with several chair shots, and they had to cheat several times just to get the win. So I thought the way they kind of set that up to make Rock still, hey, you're going to lose, but we're going to make you look really good doing it. I like that spot as well.
I agree with that.
What was your worst match of the night, sir?
My worst match of the night, gimmick battle royal.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You didn't like seeing all the old school guys out there?
No, that was fine. Just having to wait 17 minutes to get to a 2.5-minute match I didn't care for.
That's fair. My worst match of the night was China versus Ivory. No interest, no execution, no thank you.
Yeah.
What is your best match of the night, sir?
Best match, TLC 2.
That was a pretty fantastic one. I like the Austin Rock match, but it's kind of hard to take away from those six guys. Who is your MVP of WrestleMania 17?
MVP of WrestleMania 17, Bobby the Brain Heenan.
What?
For three minutes? He did great. But for the entire event, I'm giving it to Paul Heyman. I felt that he made me care about matches a lot more. And there was a lot more he had a lot more weight to what he was saying.
Yeah.
And there wasn't jokes like the King. Like, obviously, JR and the King have a great chemistry. I don't think JR and Paul Heyman had a great chemistry together.
See, that's what bothered it for me. I didn't think those two were as good. And maybe it's because maybe Paul takes some of JR's analysis.
Yeah, there was too much analysis for both of them.
Because really, usually the King's just there to say weird shit.
Right.
And so that may have been where the disconnect was.
It was like two play-by-plays versus a play-by-play in a color.
Yeah.
I get it, but I think Paul Heyman had – it was
okay.
For me, I enjoyed it.
Sure. My MVP for WrestleMania 17 is The Rock.
Oh, yeah? Explain.
I will explain. he took a lot of abuse.
Yeah.
And he'd carried the company for 2 years, and he let the guy that came back take the championship in his hometown.
Yeah.
And I just thought he did a great – like, he sold everything well, and he let this whole thing happen.
Yeah.
I mean, he took several chair shots. He took a lot of abuse, and I just thought he did a great job.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that takes – he didn't have to do shit.
Right,
He didn't have to – and that's what I like about The Rock and Austin. It seemed like every time they got together, they tried to put on the best match that they possibly could, and it wasn't for the two biggest names in the sport at this time. For him to have, and it's probably not lack of ego, but just at least the intelligence to go, oh, I'm still going to make money by doing all this. He was at least smart enough to go, hey, we're better with The Rock, or we're better with Austin doing this.
Yeah,
we're going to get a lot further than if I'm just selfish. So I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, I like that.
So
good analysis.
Well, that's all the time we have for WrestleMania X7. Join us next week when we are at WrestleMania X8.
Yeah.
And some of the matches that we're looking forward to are Triple H versus Chris Jericho as the main event. What else? We've got The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold versus Scott Hall, and so much more. But until then, I am Terry Gobbly Gooker Catlett, here with Shway P.S. Holt, and we will see you next time.
Bye.